Hello, everybody. Welcome to the latest Star Ledger podcast. Alongside, in a brilliant Connor Orr, I am Mike Borkanoff. Connor, what's up?
What's with that introduction, by the way?
I'm trying to give people an idea into what your mental state is right now. And right now, you just look really happy, really energetic, like you're excited by what's going on in your life and to this podcast.
You're bringing people beyond that. Yeah, you're bringing people beyond the microphone.
Look,
I appreciate that.
This is an oral medium. I want to make this an emotional medium.
Sounds good to me. All right, well, I think we should get right into it. I think we're in the heart of NBA free agency right now. You know, we're taping this, on Monday, and the Dwight Howard trade, I think, is still kind of the biggest thing on everybody's mind. The deal for Dwight Howard is still kind of the biggest thing on everybody's mind. And what originally everyone thought was a sign that he was not coming to the Nets when they made that previous signing. I mean, now it looks like, this is a very real possibility that Dwight Howard could be joining a team with three other really, really good basketball players.
Yeah, and I, just as a little asterisk to put on this is a fluid situation. And the latest iteration as of Monday afternoon is it looks like it's something near a three-team deal with New Jersey, Orlando, and maybe kind of almost probably Cleveland.
Right.
With, I've heard, as much as 12, 14 people being involved along with picks.
A boatload of picks, yeah.
Picks, cash, I don't know. I don't know what else. A goat being sacrificed. but that's the latest iteration, obviously subject to change. And with Chris Humphreys potentially going to Cleveland, Chris Humphreys and Dwight Howard have the same agent, Dan Fagan, so that would obviously work out well. He has two horses in that race, and mm-hmm. The Nets getting Dwight Howard and letting go of some assets like Brook Lopez and Marshawn Brooks. The interesting thing I think about is that they'd have to sign Brooks. He's a restricted free agent, but if they're going to get a sign and trade done, it's going to be a multi-year deal, so he's going to be willing, he's going to have to be willing to go to Orlando.
Right. And that's the thing. I think we should start there. I mean, we were talking about this a little bit before we started taping, and one of the things that we both kind of agreed upon is that this trade would seriously benefit two parties and kind of not so much the third one. I mean, Cleveland stands to become a way better team from this trade. I mean, if it all works out.
Yeah, it's odd how the third party who doesn't benefit is the one trading superstar.
Trading Dwight Howard.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, and this kind of brings it back to, something that we've talked about on previous podcasts, too, is if you're the Magic, I mean, what do you do here? And I mean, I think that's the interesting thing, is to put yourself in the position of Orlando's GM and start there. I mean, do you really think that you're getting the best deal in this incarnation of the trade? Or, I mean, do you think that it might be worthwhile just to hold on to him until the trade deadline, in February?
I think we've said all along the best potential single asset they can get back is Andrew Bynum from the Lakers.
Mm-hmm.
But, there's a problem there because Andrew Bynum is a free agent next summer as well.
Right.
And through back channels, and he's made it clear that his options right now, his top options are Dallas and Cleveland. And we talked about, man, if Andrew Bynum goes to Cleveland with Kyrie Irving and with Deion Waiters and Tristan Thompson and Tyler Zeller coming off the bench, all of a sudden that's a top three team in the East, I think, behind potential mega trio in New Jersey and the Heatles down in Miami. But that kind of, I assume, threw Orlando off the Los Angeles scent, because if you can't get Bynum to commit to a long-term contract, why would you make that deal?
Mm-hmm.
I still think the best single value asset they can get outside of that is with Atlanta and Al Horford and Jeff Teague, because I'd rather get Al Horford at the price he comes at, $12 million for the next 4 years, and Jeff Teague over Brook Lopez and Marshawn Brooks. And you're going to get draft picks either way, and you assume that, I think that would be better off. But I guess maybe with Dwight not agreeing to re-sign there, that takes Atlanta out of it. I don't know. There's so many moving parts here that make everything so difficult to gauge and figure out, let alone what their deadline is for trading them.
Yeah, I mean, here's why I think my whole issue with this thing is I'm so against players in the NBA controlling the power structure. You know what I'm saying? I'm so against.
You're so elitist.
I'm just.
Why do you hate the 99%?
I just think it's just such a dangerous precedent to set, because now, I mean, the league is going to be controlled by a select few. And it's going to be basically handcuffed by a select few. And
well, I don't even know about that. But I feel like, look, when you have a contract, because of the terms that are set, you wanna live up to the contract. You sign, you know, hypothetically, you sign Dwight Howard for 4 years. He wants to leave after four. Well, that's the contract you signed, and you can just respect it and live out those terms. It's not like they're completely taking over the process. Teams still have say in this, you know. And why is it that players can't control their own fate? We've grown up in like this paternalistic sports complex where teams always have to be the dominant power structure, as if like that's the only way it can be.
I don't know. I just kind of it's more comfortable that way. I don't know. No, but I mean, I think that, you know, Dwight Howard has the possibility to completely cripple the Magic.
Yeah, I mean, he could do to Orlando what LeBron did to Cleveland.
Right.
Although he's doing this in like, LeBron did it like with a snap of his fingers and one Comic Sans letter, while Orlando is just, Dwight's just like stringing this out over now, what, a year, year and a half, and just making this uncomfortable process that I think is just,
well, that's the worst part.
Annoying to everyone.
I mean, these guys, these players, a lot of them aren't businessmen. They're not savvy people. They are.
Well, this is why they have agents, right?
Exactly. And that, see, that's why, you know, I think that it's dangerous to let people who think that they're above the league, above GMs, in some cases above their own agents,
well,
kind of control the, you know, control the power structure.
Wait, why? I don't know if they're necessarily thinking they're above agents. They have their own interests that they're trying to play out, which are different than the GM's interests. And so you just have dueling interests and doing goals that you want to accomplish. It's not as if they're, you know, it's they think they're smarter. Dwight wants to go play in Brooklyn. Orlando wants him to play in Orlando. And now it's like, all right, well, let's negotiate something that best accomplishes our shared goals here. Right?
So if you're David Stern, then what do you say to the Magic? I mean, too bad?
I mean... The NBA just came off the best rating season it's had since, like, what, the Jordan era with, you know, this perceived superstars run amok type of situation, right? Everybody wants to watch LeBron in Miami and what they fail or, you know, win a championship or all that. And now you've got superstars being sent off into various big market cities, which is great, I assume, in the long term. For two purposes. One, it puts the largest cities in the best chance to win, which is great for marketing and for ratings. And two, now you have the smaller market cities also being able to develop high-level talent like Oklahoma City, because they're going to be picking high in the draft. And it's not like everyone's going to want to leave. Durant and Westbrook just re-signed in Oklahoma City. They want to make that a little mini dynasty of their own. Who knows what Kyrie Irving will do in Cleveland. It's not as if everyone is going to go. I'm sure that Chris Paul would have stayed in New Orleans if they could have promised him, you know, a smart organization that would have a chance to win a championship.
You seem like you were a big Reaganomics guy based on the way you're talking here.
I wasn't a fan of the Star Wars program, mainly because it took attention away from Star Wars, the movie. You know what I mean? And it just... You can't do that. Pick something else. Pick the Star Trek program name for it.
You're a big trickle-down effect guy, it sounds like.
It is what it is.
When it comes to
basketball. I just think that like putting everything on the burden as the burden of the players is wrong, and it somehow assumes fault for them that isn't necessarily there.
Well, let's start by, you know, let's start by at least kind of doing a brief State of the Union. You know, we're looking at the Nets right now, you know, through the eyes of, you know, Monday. But if you look at the team as it is right now, and, you know, even if this Dwight Howard trade isn't happening, or even if we can assume that it's not done or it's not going to get done, I still think that they made leaps and bounds from last year. I think they put themselves in the playoffs, and I think, you know, for all intents and purposes, you know, you're moving into a new arena. You made the right steps forward. I think that Billy King gets a passing grade for this offseason no matter what.
I agree. I mean, you just went from lottery team to playoff team to middle of the pack Eastern Conference playoff team. So you're going into Brooklyn with one superstar, one, you know, B-plus player, you're guaranteeing a playoff team, basically, you know, unless everyone breaks their legs collectively. And that's great that you have marquee names to put on the marquee when you get to Brooklyn, and you're going to sell out. And if you're going to try to steal attention from the Knicks and season ticket holders and advertising dollars, you're not going to do it with, you know, Marshawn Brooks as your spotlight player, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to do it with Deron Williams and excuse me, and Joe Johnson and Brook Lopez and all of that. And what really, I think, sold me, because I was kind of wishy-washy on this trade, because it was the odd trade where the Hawks and their fans and their organization was happy to let Joe Johnson
go. You never want to acquire someone that people are happy to give away.
Yeah, you always think, like, ah, this isn't good. Why am I getting, like, an asset that is...
the Steelers vis-a-vis Santonio Holmes or
something. Yeah, something like that. Yeah. And then, you know, but Nets fans were happy to get him because it means winning, which they haven't done at a high level since the Jason Kidd era. But I think what sold me is that Deron Williams, like, look, you know, I was kind of leaning towards the Mavericks before they traded for Joe Johnson. And if that's what that acquisition meant, at the very least, that they re-signed Deron Williams, then how can you pan it?
Yeah. No, and I think it was good. It just showed that they're not going to sit on their hands, because I think that everyone, and the Nets included, just spent way too much time sitting on their hands waiting for Dwight Howard to make up his mind. And at this point, it's not worth it anymore. It's really not worth it anymore, because he's shown that there's just this rash decision-making, and whether he's able to be swayed one way in Orlando or swayed the other way, or he has his agent in one ear and his friends in the other ear. I mean, it's difficult for him to make a decision. So why sit on your hands and wait? Why not give Deron somebody else to get the ball to, someone to help him open up the floor? So that's why I think, you know, as it stands right now, I mean, you have a pretty decent starting five if you end up just bringing back Brook Lopez.
I agree. And I mean, and the most important thing is they haven't cut themselves off from the whole Dwight Howard idea.
Mm-hmm.
And if he does in some sort of way become a free agent next year, I'm sure they can still find the way to clear up cap space. Although that would be really difficult considering the amount of money that you could still do sign and trade somehow, you know, next offseason when Dwight has even more leverage than he does now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like they have given themselves a floor, but they haven't quite capped their ceiling yet.
They also have an owner, though, that could probably handle the luxury tax hit. I mean,
well, after a while, there's just a hard cap that you can't go over.
Right, yeah. But for the immediate time being, I think Prokhorov could probably...
Yeah, what is... I think someone on Twitter, and so I... Let's just half assume this is a real stat. says he makes, like, $100 million every, like, few months.
That's not bad.
At max, he's going to lose, what, $80 million in luxury tax this year? He's willing to take that trade-off.
I think so.
Especially because he's got that five-year window to win a championship, and I know he really doesn't want to get married.
That's a good point.
That would drive me more than anything else.
If you're Prokhorov?
If you're Prokhorov.
He's got a lot of assets to protect.
In so many different ways.
Indeed. All right, so let's move on to, we kind of just touched on the Nets a little bit. Let's, you know, jump across town for a minute. I think the last time that we talked, or, you know, at least kind of started kicking ideas around, the Knicks didn't really have that much of an exciting free agency period. Now it seems almost completely different. I don't want to overplay the acquisition of Jason Kidd, but I think it was a brilliant move, even if you're only going to get 20, 25 minutes a game, 30 minutes a game. I think it was a great move. I think that's going to completely help out that offense.
You think it's going to help the offense?
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was great for the kind of the intangible reasons, in that perhaps he can help Carmelo Anthony assert himself, but not become a dominant ball force, which was an issue several times last year, and kind of help ball movement in that sense. I don't know how much he has left to really help the offense. He's at best a 20-minute player. The other thing that I was actually that. If you're a Knicks fan, I think would trouble you is that Jason Kidd said he doesn't care if he starts, but if he wants to play the last six, he wants to play the last 6 minutes of the game. And given the construction of that team right now, what does that mean? Who has to sit? Because, you know, Jeremy Lin signed that, or will sign, the restricted offer sheet with Houston that the Knicks will obviously match.
Mm-hmm.
You have Carmelo Anthony. You have Tyson Chandler. Iman Shumpert should be back at some point next year. So you have him as a shooting guard. You have Amari Stoudemire, and that's six guys for five spots on the floor. Does that mean they're going to not play Iman Shumpert, which stunts his development, who could really become, you know, an above-average shooting guard who plays really, really good defense for you. And I think hurts your offense as well because he's so much better offensively than Jason Kidd. Does that mean you don't play Amari Stoudemire in the last 6 minutes of a game and you go small like they had so much success doing at the end of the year last year with Carmelo Anthony at the four, which could actually work out to their benefit? But does Mike Woodson basically, does he have the gumption and the chutzpah to sit Amari
to sit Amari Stoudemire,
you know, for the last 6 minutes of a game?
Why not sit Jeremy Lin for the last 6 minutes of the game and let Kidd run the point? I mean,
Jeremy Lin is ostensibly at their right now their second best offensive player.
He gives
diversity to their offense that they don't have with Jason Kidd. Jason Kidd is not a good offensive player. He's a good spot up 3-point shooter if you move the ball to him when he's open, but he can't create a shot anymore. He's not good enough to beat guys off the dribble and create shots for others. Does that mean you just play mellow ball the final five, six minutes of a game?
I think that Jason Kidd, what you bring him in for is the last 6 minutes. I mean, I think that's why you want him. I mean,
I think what?
Because Jason Kidd's been in the league so long that he understands and
is he going to win games with his brain? With his perseverance and his leadership?
I think that there's some value.
Are those going to hit jump shots and lead an offense?
I think that there's some value to having a guy around that knows the NBA enough, that understands egos, that has the level of respect that he does to be able to command an offense like that. Because in the final 6 minutes of the game, I mean, we forget, I mean, the massive problems with turnovers that Jeremy Lin had last year.
He averaged 4.7 turnovers a game when he was, you know, started, but I think that was also mitigated by the fact he had the ball in his hands every single possession he was in, and he was playing 40 minutes a night. And with Carmelo Anthony, that's not going to happen.
But at the same time, if you're a player, if you're Carmelo, or if you're Amare, if you're Tyson Chandler, who are you listening to? I mean, and if Jason Kidd is saying, you know, let's space it out this way, let's break it down this way, I've done this before, I know this is going to work, I know who we're playing on defense, I know you're going to be open, are you listening to him more than you're listening to Jeremy Lin? I think so. And at the same time, Lin is still getting a majority of the playing time. You know, you're still helping his development as a point guard, but at the same time, you're putting your best five on the floor for the final 6 minutes, and I think that's fine. I mean, I think that, you know, and Jason Kidd is part of your best five. I mean, let's not forget, Jeremy Lin fit in very well with that Knicks offense, and I think that's what it is. It's a fit. You know, I think it was a good, you know, molding, and then I think everything else kind of took off from the periphery. But, I mean, Jason Kidd's been a very, 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 very good player in this league for a long, long, long time. So you can't discount that. And, I mean, I think he can fit himself into more situations than Lin can.
Well, see, I agree with you on the leadership, that they're more willing to listen to Jason Kidd. But I don't think he's physically able to play at a high enough level to warrant playing him in the last 6 minutes. I mean, if you go back to Dallas, the guys holding the ball in the last minutes of the game were Jason Terry or running something with Dirk Nowitzki. It wasn't run with Jason Kidd conventionally running the point guard or what he did in his earlier days with New Jersey. And I think Jeremy Lin is the better player. And you would hope that you have a coach who is strong enough to get these guys to buy in. And, I mean, if really you need to have Jason Kidd on the court just so you play some kind of non-isolation basketball, your team's messed up to a larger degree than you think. And, you know, the team worked so well when you had guys like Steve Novak providing, you know, 3-point shooting and opening up spacing in the court. So you're taking out a valuable offensive asset for someone who provides leadership, but doesn't provide as much on the court.
I'm not saying just leadership, though. I'm saying general understanding. I'm saying the ability to be, a coach on the floor. All these kind of things. You know, I hate the word intangibles, but if I'm a coach and somebody says, okay, who would you rather be your point guard for this final series here, Jason Kidd or Jeremy Lin? I'm not even blinking an eye at it. Jason Kidd's going to have the ball.
But all you've listed is the intangibles for why he should play, not his skill set, right?
I think the intangibles are the skill set.
Can he do that off the bench? Can he talk and massage egos and get everyone to play along as a good teammate off the bench, or does he have to be on the court for that?
I think he has to be on the court for that.
I mean, if he has to be on the court for that, then I think you're really kind of hurting yourself that you have to put a diminished player instead of, you know, Jeremy Lin, who's, I think, better right now.
I don't know. I think that the idea of having Jason Kidd on the floor for even 20 minutes
game is okay. I think at 20 minutes as a backup guard, a point guard and shooting guard, that
including
works
the final
well.
6 minutes.
Including so the final
14 minutes in the first half, final 6 minutes in the second half.
I don't know. I don't see it. I think you want to have your best player out there, and I don't think he's the best player.
So right now, as it stands, we're looking at a Nets team that has gotten progressively better. We're looking at a Knicks team that
has gotten marginally better.
So right now, from our standpoint, you know, covering New York basketball in this area, now it's just totally New York basketball in this area. Who do you think has put themselves at a higher playoff seed to start next year? Assuming we're still holding the Dwight Howard deal is not finished. Who has a higher seed in next year's playoffs?
That's a tough one. I think probably right now, and man, that Atlantic division is stacked with Boston signing Jason Terry, although they lost Ray Allen, and they get Jeff Green back, and they get your boy Jared Sollinger in there, and your other boy Fab Mello in there. and maybe they'll add another Syracuse player down the line somewhere. you know, I think they're the number three seed right now. And then I think you might have...
You think the Knicks are the number three seed?
No, I think Boston's the number three seed.
Okay.
So I think you could have a situation where the Nets are four and the Knicks are five.
Really?
And then...
Without the Dwight Howard deal being done.
Yeah, no, you take that off the table because if that happens... And, you know, the great question mark is what happens to Derrick Rose next year? Because we don't know, you know, what form his knee is going to be in, what form he's going to be in. So Chicago could be a worse team, although they've shown an ability to kind of be able to play without him. You could see a situation where Boston's the two seed, Chicago's the three seed, and then the Nets are four, and the Knicks are five.
I think either way, that's a great...
Yeah. I mean, if we get a 4-5 matchup like that, that's awesome.
Yeah.
You can't complain about that.
But as far as... So you think right now you like the current construction of the Nets team without Dwight Howard above the Knicks team and adding Jason Kidd and assuming that they match the offer sheet on Lin and they... Looks like Novak has agreed to a deal as well. So mm-hmm. you like the new Nets construction as opposed to what the Knicks have.
I do. I think just because they fit better. I think, you know, if somehow, some way, the Knicks can find a way to, like, come together, which they haven't shown an ability to do in the last year and a half in the Carmelo Amari era, because Tyson Chandler gives them that defensive anchor that the Nets don't have because Brooke Lopez is not good defensively, he's not a good rebounder, and I think last year they were fifth in points allowed per 100 possessions, the Knicks were. So, I mean, they can be a good defensive team, but they still get discombobulated too much offensively. And so that hurts their rhythm and it hurts them, you know, their ceiling in that sense. I think, yeah, New Jersey would be the better team there by a little bit.
I think that Brooklyn. Yeah.
Brooklyn.
Yikes. I think that the Knicks are going to end up being a better team next year, assuming, you know, again.
How many games are they going to win?
How many games are they going to win?
How many games are they going to win? Playing Boston four times a year, playing the Nets four times a year, playing Philly four times a year, and then getting four punts against Toronto.
I'm not going to put a number on it right now.
No? Oh.
I'm not going to put a number on it right now. But here's the thing. So you have an entire offseason because last year, and I think we've used this analogy before, last year it was just sort of like, let's just go to every different junkyard we can possibly have and attach pieces to this ridiculous looking car that we have, which has two pieces that essentially want to do the same thing but they're in different parts of the car, and then we have to find a way to jam all this together and make it drive. And I think that with a full off season, Woodson's going to be able to look at things from the outside. He's going to be able to see where everybody fits in. I think Jason Kidd helps tremendously in that regard because he understands the way that this works. He understands where people need the ball, where people are going to be. And I think his input there is valuable, too. And I think that you'll start to see them get more out of the superstar combination that they have, as opposed to where last year it was largely wasted because we didn't really see the full potential.
Yeah, and I think you also have to include into that thinking is that Amari's on this downside. He is farther away from his prime. You know, he's getting away from that because he really had a great first half of the season with the Knicks when he got there. And then, you know, then he got injured a lot last year. Carmelo came in, took a lot of the offensive responsibilities away. So he's injury prone. He's older. I think he's 30 now, 29 or 30 years old. He's had good mileage on those legs. He's had several knee surgeries. He had some back issues. He's, you know, he's, I think, farther away from his prime than he is, you know, his end, even though he's only 30 years old.
Do you think that he should come off the bench next year?
I think that would be optimal for them. But good luck trying to tell a $100 million guy to come off the bench in the third year of his contract.
It's a dangerous precedent to set, right? Because all of a sudden you're signing these. Well, I mean, for GMs, right? It's scary because it's a max deal environment right now, and so you're gonna have to pay guys this kind of money, and you're gonna have to
if guys deserve it.
But did Amari deserve a max deal?
I think it was. I would say no, but New York really just needed to sign a free agent at that time.
So what's
they
to say?
A face for the
right,
franchise.
Right. So what's to say that 2 years down the road, the Lakers aren't going to feel this same kind of pinch, or the Magic aren't going to feel the same kind of pinch, where they're going to have to sign somebody towards?
Look, the market always creates, you know, contracts. And
that's what I'm saying.
Is.
It's just a dangerous kind of area for GMs right now because you're in this max deal world, and you know this is kind of what you're going to have to do.
Somewhere along the line, you're going to have to realize that you know signing an Amari Stoudemire for 5 years and $100 million, it looks good in that first year, years 3, 4, 5. In hindsight, not a smart decision. You gotta have some leadership in you, right, to understand what's better long term for your franchise.
When is Moneyball gonna hit the NBA?
Moneyball's already there. Have you not seen the Houston Rockets?
I'm talking about successfully.
Oh, ouch. But it's so much more difficult in the NBA because it's like you need superstars to win. And superstars are apparent. You're not going to... I mean, Jeremy Lin, even at his top form, was not like, you know, a top 10 player in the NBA. He wasn't a top 15 guy. You're not going to find a top 10 player under a rock in, you know, the bottom part of the second round because he's a fat catcher from Alabama or something. Is that Jeremy Brown?
Jeremy Brown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Barry Zito went in the first round, right?
Very true. Heck of a curveball.
Yeah.
So anyway, I think what we're trying to get at here is that I sense that there's, you and I are sort of on opposite ends here. You think that the Nets, I think you're really, really high on the
I don't
Nets.
Think I'm really, I put them as like what, a 3 seed in the East? A 4 seed?
That's pretty high.
What are you thinking, 8 seed?
I think without the Dwight deal getting done, like a 5 or a 6.
Who's better than them?
There's a lot of teams that could be better than
who? I'm asking who? If you're putting them as a 6 seed, that means you have 5 teams in mind that are better, right? That's how that works.
Let's look at let's pull up the NBA playoff teams from last year.
Sure. You had Chicago as the top seed.
Mm-hmm.
Then you had Miami at 2.
Mm-hmm.
Then you had Boston at 3.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had the dead man's trio of Orlando and Atlanta because both of those are now ravaged and dead. And then you had number six being, sorry. It was actually, why is this escaping me? Orlando was the 6 seed. What was the 4-5 matchup? Oh, it was Indiana. Indiana makes a number. They're a good team too.
Right.
We forgot about Indiana.
Right.
So I think at this point I might put them ahead in the Nets.
Yeah. That's why I think I just see that, you know. And I don't see every other team getting worse all of a sudden. I mean, yeah, the Nets have become markedly better, but at the same time, I don't think they're there yet. Unless this Dwight Howard deal gets done, which, you know, if that gets done, I think they could very well be the second best, third best team in the East.
Third best?
You never know what Boston's going to do. You never know if they have a little bit of life left in them.
Here's how it went last year. Chicago, Miami, Indiana, Boston, Atlanta. Orlando, New York, Philadelphia. Atlanta and Orlando are out. They're mm-hmm. done. Chicago is going to be without Derrick Rose for beginning of the season. Who knows how long till he comes back, and then who knows what shape he's in. I doubt he'll be back to being Derrick Rose next year.
You know, at least until
Derrick Rose.
At least until January.
So that means New York slides up to a 5 seed, just based on last year's rankings alone. You still have Philadelphia out there.
Big Andre Iguodala guy.
He might get traded.
True.
I think, you know, say if you think the Nets are better, they're a 5 seed. Just on that little transitive property exercise. And if you think that Chicago's going to fall off without Derrick Rose for a full season, that's a 4 seed. Which is right about where you slot them. And if you think they're better in Indiana, that's a 3 seed. And if you think Boston can't withstand an entire season because they're old and
we're
around at the time of, you know, the turn of the century, that's a, what? How high do you have them going then?
Wow. So you're really...
Hypotheticals are fun, aren't they?
They are. Yeah, but you're really, I mean, you're...
No, I'm not saying that's going to happen. I think there'll be a 3 or 4 seed.
It's safe to say, though, that, I mean, we talked about giving Billy King a passing grade. It sounds like you're giving him like an A plus for this offseason.
I'd give, no, because I don't think you can give him an A because he hasn't constructed a championship caliber team. It has a ceiling. If he gets Dwight, then yeah, you give him 2 A's, 3 A's. You give him a salary raise. But until then, this is still an Eastern Conference semifinals type of team. Maybe Eastern Conference finals team. But you still refuse to give any predictions for next year.
I'm going to hold off, just because, like we said, this is a very fluid situation.
You're going to play it out on NBA Live first.
I'm going to play it out on NBA Live.
Auto simulations.
It's kind of how I do everything. It's why I like Jason Kidd so much.
Yeah. Yeah. Who doesn't want a 39-year-old point guard who can't shoot off the dribble?
I think you're going to be so wrong about that.
Can we make a bet about this?
Absolutely.
All right, you think he'll be an all-star? I don't.
No. Of course he's not going to be an all-star next year.
I didn't know how high you were going to go. What's your projection for him?
That if you take the per-minute splits when he's in the game...
How statistically savvy of you.
That's right, I'm talking splits.
Okay.
You take the per-minute stats...
All right.
...when he's in the game with the Knicks' big... 3.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
I think that they will score 5 to 6 more points on average for when he was in there. As opposed to Jeremy Lin, yeah.
All right. I'll take the opposite side of that and the rational side of that. And we'll put a friendly bet on it.
That's fine.
We'll figure it out, and we'll reveal it at a podcast to be named later.
Sure.
Nobody wants to listen to us argue back and forth about what a friendly wager constitutes.
Right. So I think that the only way to round this out the right way is to give it back. We just passed the 4th of July holiday. It's really time to give it back to America, and that means I'm throwing a little bit of a surprise at you here, but the U.S. basketball team. You know, I think it's just appropriate to round everything out.
Uh-huh.
The U.S. basketball team, the final rosters were decided.
Right.
How did you feel about the way that Coach K constructed his roster for this
year? I loved it. I thought he made all the good decisions there. I liked Eric Gordon, and I thought you could have gone with him over James Harden. But in the end, I thought they were kind of just interchangeable parts. And James Harden, I feel like, can play multiple positions. And... I think he just works out better. I mean, it's like, it's nitpicking at that point. It hurts them that Dwight's not going to be on there and that Bynum doesn't want to play and that Dwayne Wade just had surgery. But with what they have, I think it's been great because they can be really versatile. You can have LeBron James playing the 4 and Blake Griffin playing the 5.
Mm-hmm.
And now you've got this uber-athletic front court that, while Spain has the 2 Gasols, can they match that athleticism?
No. And that's why I think one of the things that I think... You know, I've watched enough of the international game to know.
I know you were watching all the qualifying over the weekend.
No.
was just about to ask you what you thought of Greece losing.
But I think that too much is made on the assertion that the international game is so much different than pro basketball. I know it's different, but, you know, why in any world is Blake Griffin still on the fence? I mean, he redefined his position in the NBA. He's one of the most...
Have you stopped watching NBA basketball, too?
No, I mean, he's just completely dangerous. And I think that no matter what situation you put yourself in, Blake Griffin is one of the best players in basketball. And I think that there's no doubt in my mind that he would be successful in the international game. Just because, okay, yeah, he doesn't have a jump shot. But what does that matter when literally nobody can stop him on the way to the basket?
Well, look, he's a good player. He's a top 20 player in the NBA. But it's not like the guys that are choosing from were scrubs, you know what I mean? Eric Gordon is really good. Andre Iguodala is really good. Those are players that, you know, you need height, so you take Blake Griffin. But you also need versatility. You need good players who do fit international basketball. You do need shooters out there. You need guys who can rebound. And Blake Griffin's job is going to be to rebound. And it's going to be to defend. And it's going to be not to cry after every foul call that goes after him, against them. And he's probably only going to play, you know, 15, 20 minutes a night. Because you've kind of got your crunch time lineup set up. You know, you have Kobe, you have Chris Paul, you have LeBron, you have Kevin Durant, and then you have Tyson Chandler. And Blake Griffin is right now, I would say, the backup center.
Right. But so, at the same point, I just don't, you know, I think that too much is made. I think, you know, it needs to be more of a best player available kind of philosophy when you're picking the international roster. And I'm glad that...
I don't know. I'd rather have Kevin Love. Kevin Love is a better rebounder. Kevin Love is a much, 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 much better shooter. Those are two high premium skills in international basketball.
Blake Griffin's a better dunker.
That's great. He's going to have a lot of alley-oops for him.
But I think, you know, I do think that Kevin, you know, I would have picked Kevin Love over Blake Griffin anyway. You know, but I'm just saying that there's a lot of it. I think there's a lot said about the difference between the international game and the NBA game. But I think that, you know, you just can't ignore a guy like
But, you know, Blake Griffin maybe doesn't make the team if Dwight Howard's healthy and if Dwayne Wade is healthy and Chris Bosh is healthy.
So you would take... You would take in a heartbeat. You would take Bosh over. Over Griffin.
He's a good rebounder. He can shoot from the outside. He's used to playing off the ball.
I would think about it.
You're crazy. You'd think about it.
I'd give it a coin flip.
All right. I'm just gonna sigh in the background.
I think that's an appropriate way to end yet another installment of.
I thought we were gonna talk some All-Star Game. Some baseball All-Star Game. I know you're sad about R.A. Dickey not starting. You don't care about R.A. Dickey?
Not really.
Okay. All right, but fine. Before we go, though, you heard our awesome intro music. We're going to outro it with it as well. We want to give a special thank you to Dan Worthington for putting labor into creating that. I love it. We've, I think, not yet heard the best part of it.
Okay.
And we'll hear that in the outro.
All right.
I like how he's kind of giving us a nickname for the show, a definition for the show, I would say, a direction for the show.
Which is something we sorely lacked heading into it.
But no, nonetheless, you know, it's cool that Dan made our own intro music.
Very cool.
Anyway, that's about it. That's going to wrap it up for us this week. We'll be back soon with some great analysis and really bad jokes and whatever else we can provide in this medium. So for Connor Orr, I'm Mike Borgonoff. See you guys next time.